Think about the end of the movie and tell me it's not A Tale of Two Cities. Like, okay, everything about it is
Sydney
A Tale of Two
doesn't
Cities.
Die. There's no Sydney.
Yeah, but Bruce Wayne dies. No, sorry. Batman dies. Bruce Wayne doesn't die, but Batman dies.
Yeah, but A Tale of Two Cities, they're two different people.
And you don't think Batman and Bruce Wayne are
two different people?
One of them's Batman.
The other one's Bruce Wayne.
Lars, hold on. Let's go into this fan theory. Do you think Bruce Wayne is Batman?
Yes. I believe that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Jesus Christ.
Man, I don't know what to tell you.
That's the fucking stupidest thing I've ever heard. Go, get out of here.
Yeah, I gotta pee really fucking bad.
Introduction. I'm Sam. I've been gingerly lathering Burt's Bees beeswax lip balm on occasionally because my lips have been chapped. Was that your introduction?
Yeah. I'm Lars. I burped. I ran out of water. I'm sure I'll get more later.
Nothing is stopping you from doing that now.
Yeah, well, I'm going to keep doing my intro, so fuck you. I'm Lars, and this week I kissed a Mexican.
It wasn't me. Okay. I'm Juan. I just finished drinking my horchata. I'm kind of sad, too, because that was really good. I didn't ask for ice because it's cold out, but yeah, I don't I probably won't get more. That place is closing soon, I'm guessing. So,
but what did we ask each other?
Yeah, in a similar way, I because we were reading a lot of these end of the decade lists, a lot of these decisions of people being made by people of what were the best TV shows of the decade, what were the best albums of the decade, what were the best memes of the decade, what were the best films of the decade, and no one's gonna give a shit about what we thought the best films of the decade were, but the films that we saw for the first time this decade that struck us in a way that was profound. Not even necessarily films belonging to that decade. I just, I had fun thinking about this.
Yeah, I don't think none of mine came out in this last decade. One of them comes close.
Wait.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think any of mine come out from this decade either.
That doesn't surprise me. I bet all of yours come out between 82 and 98.
Kind of close, yeah.
Well then... Wait, yeah, why don't you start then? Why don't you start with the movie I'm assuming you're going to start with?
Okay, so I'll start with the one that was on Sam's list, though both of the others I did think about when concocting this list. But I went in kind of with... Because you texted us and you were like, all right, what were some of the most important films to you of the decade that you saw this decade?
Yeah, like in your growth as someone that likes film.
And so I kind of came at it from three different angles. I did a film that turned me on to film, a film that emblifies what I love in film, and something that challenged me and kind of grew my bubble even further.
Okay.
And so the one that you got right was Black Dynamite.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh.
American Psycho, not on the list. Even though that is the movie that directly introduced me into film, I chose a different one that I like more.
Okay, so then what was...
So Black Dynamite is that's my middle movie. That's the one that, like, that's out of all the movies I've seen in this decade, that's the one I've watched the most since I saw it. And I saw it probably 2013. And I probably have seen it 25 times. Like, I watch that movie all the time. It's my favorite thing to show everyone. And that is, to me, the greatest like treasure I've discovered in film this decade.
Did you have a structure for yours?
Yeah, I follow the same structure as Lars.
Okay.
So I think for the first one, for me, the one that was kind of influential on me getting into film was The Thing.
Ooh, okay.
Just because...
Which is also your favorite movie, right?
Yeah, yeah. I really love the premise. The fear and all that stuff, like the paranoia that it makes you feel throughout your viewing of it. The music, which is all done by John Carpenter, which is
the GOAT.
Yeah, GOAT. And just
da, 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 da.
Yeah, I like everything, the effects. I remember first seeing that movie and like actually being grossed enough to like cover my eyes. Mm-hmm. And then, like, rewatching it again, being like, how I need to figure out how they make those effects look so, like, real.
Mm-hmm.
And that added on top of the fact that, like, The Thing is just, like, it's so horrifying because you can't really define what it is. It's just The Thing. And that for me is, like, the most influential film.
Okay.
How'd you do yours?
So I had, I was thinking about how I wanted to do that. As I'm moving forward and still having convinced myself that this is a field that I'm going to be able to get into, and as I was thinking, what movies have I seen in the past decade that have not only drawn me deeper into the love of film, but have sort of reflected what I want to make and see in my own films. And the first one that I thought of, I love films that manage to build these crazy worlds outside of science fiction and fantasy. And so, like, what I picked was City of God.
Oh.
Which I know you've seen City of God. Have you seen it yet? You should
definitely watch that. Yeah.
Favorite movie. Yeah, City of God takes you into these separate overarching stories. It almost creates clans in the way that it builds this these different Rio like gangs of Rio de Janeiro. It speaks of everything in legends, like urban legends almost. And I think the first time I watched it, do you guys remember Hey Arnold? How Gerald was kind of the neighborhood keeper of all the urban legends, which is just always how
it's
I thought of
so long since I've
Rocket
seen that show.
In the movie. Yeah, I know, but like that's how I felt about Rocket in the movie City of God, how he'll start to move forward and then he's like, oh, first before I tell you about this, I have to tell you about the legend of Knockout Ned or the legend. That was my first pick, was I saw City of God probably in 2010 and it's remained in my pantheon of favorite movies since then.
Word.
Yeah.
So to go to the one that I chose in this category for me, is my favorite film of all time, Apocalypse Now.
Oh God.
Which I watched for the first time in 2010.
Okay.
With my buddy Joey Gallia, when I was 14 years old, and, holy fuck. Man, that blew my mind. There isn't a single film that has stayed with me as much as Apocalypse Now. There's just such visceral imagery the whole time. And it's like a psychedelic journey every time I watch that movie. I just go down the river with Martin Sheen. I still, every time I put my trench coat on, I try to put my jacket on the way that Martin Sheen puts his jackets on. Which he does in, like, everything he's ever done.
Yeah,
he started doing it in Apocalypse Now. But he does it in the West Wing all the time. But, yeah, that's my next pick.
My pick was The Mist, the second one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not seen that.
It's Frank Darabont. Mm-hmm. I watched this after The Walking Dead had already aired, because I think after season two, I was like, why isn't he still directing this show? No, The Mist is definitely a lot better than, like, the later seasons of The Walking Dead. And I think what I really enjoyed about this is similar to The Green Mile, which is, like, Frank Darabont just does a really good job of bringing together all these, like, wonderful actors and actresses and putting them in like, in a very tight environment where they have, like, they're... All the qualities that I love about actors of, like, Tom Jane and, like, the actor who plays Dale in The Walking Dead.
That guy who's just in everything.
Yeah, yeah. Andrea, like, I can never... All those, they're pretty much all in the...
Carol's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Carol's also... the crazy religious lady.
Yeah, but I think... I just loved, like, the ensemble and this, like, the world that it's set in. It's based off of a Stephen King book, which is cool. That's probably one of my few favorite Stephen King book adaptations.
It also has a fantastic ending.
Yeah, yeah, the ending is so sad. It's so sad, but it's, like, it's very fitting. Very yeah. fitting of a Stephen King book.
Yeah.
My second was I love when there's almost like a mathematical symmetry to a screenplay. Like when the sacred geometry is present.
when Maynard wrote it?
Yeah, when Maynard wrote his screenplays. My favorite screenplay of all time is definitely and my favorite movie of this decade, maybe, that came out in this decade, is the Coen Brothers' Inside Llewyn Davis.
Mm.
It also hits these aesthetic fronts that I love, but there's just something about the screenplay and how cyclical it is and how it doesn't... You're seeing so many bad things happening to one man, and most of it is because of how he romanticizes failure. And it's been a motivating force in my life to actually try to get out and do things and figure out how to express myself, and even try to, even if that means figuring out if I have to game the system at all in any way, because in the end, there isn't really a lot of glory to being a starving artist, and you don't really even get to see what his creation is. You just know that he has these ideals about himself, and because of that he just keeps ending up exactly where he starts. And it's just my fucking favorite Coen Brothers movie, probably my favorite movie of the decade. Love that movie so much.
It's a good one. It is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
My last film, the one that challenged me, that I was disinterested in watching at the onset, and by the end of it fell in love with it, and that's going to be The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I watched that very recently with Sam. He rented it from Odd Obsessions.
Shout out to Odd Obsessions.
Not a sponsor, but we love them.
We're trying to sponsor them.
Yeah. Yeah. You should give them money. But yeah, Sam brought it back. It's a Spanish film from, I want to say, like, 62 or something. And it's an absurdist comedy about these wealthy folks attempting to meet up for a meal, and things keep going awry, and they never have the meal. And the absurdity just kind of steps up each time they try and meet for this meal. And it's a fucking dreamlike trance. And at the beginning, I was just bored, because it starts off very... It just starts off... You're just watching, like, six people speak a language that I personally didn't speak, talking about, like, a dinner. And there was nothing, and all I knew was it was supposed to be funny, and I wasn't laughing, and I was just like, ugh. and I wanted to leave, but I was like, all right, I'm just going to keep watching it. And then by the time it ended, I had fallen in love with it. And so that was, you know, important for me because it reminded me, you know.
Yeah, you really, it's a movie you really fall into.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that.
Number three, this one doesn't really challenge me as much as it's just something that, like, I think I could watch at any given, like, if I have two and a half to 3 hours to spare at any given moment, and, like, I just need something to watch, I think it's Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men.
That's a fucking banger.
I've still never seen that
film. Oh, my God.
No, I know. I've missed out.
Yeah, everything about that film is just, like, it's fantastic. From, like, the opening sequence to its, like, really good one-track shot of, like, the car scene.
I've seen that, so I know there are some... there's, like, a minor spoiler that I have to the movie as far as certain characters that die, but I also know that it doesn't really detract from the film as a
whole. Clive Owens is fantastic. Michael Caine is... like my favorite
Michael
character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's my favorite character.
Why haven't I watched?
He's like an ideal what I'd like to be in my like 70s.
Michael Caine.
Yeah.
movies that left me speechless by the end of it. All of them were in some fashion or another. But I was thinking about this feeling that I get watching a lot of these movies of this, like, beautiful hopelessness, like, feeling utterly hopeless, but also feeling hopeful. Sort of...
the melancholy-ish.
It's... I couldn't find a term for it. But... I chose The Florida Project.
Oh, that's a good one.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's delightful.
It really is. Everything about it... It is just pure emotion in a film. Everything about it is drawing me into the little joys that have to be found in situations that are utterly bleak. Especially, I mean, it is a very bleak situation told from the perspective of a little kid who doesn't understand how bleak the situation is because that's just the only life that she has known. And also it's just, it's every little choice by every actor, and it's mostly actors who had never really been in anything before with the exception of
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. And every choice Willem Dafoe makes in that, there's this scene where he is trying to reason with these sandhill cranes.
Oh, that's
that are,
such
it
a
is
good.
Just, it's so funny because it's watching him being like, because he's such a, there's no character that is ill-intentioned. Everyone is existing in this situation of love and trying to empathize while also existing under the hardships of what essentially being homeless is. I mean, the whole movie is just about the people who have to live in a motel. Like, they can't... they're paying week by week.
Specifically outside of Disney World.
Yeah, specifically right outside of Disney World in Orlando.
Wow.
Yeah, it living in that shadow.
I mean... I don't know how you guys, if you guys know how I feel about Disney, but
oh,
it reinforces
no
some
idea.
Feelings that I have about Disney, and yeah.
Hey, listen, man, if you don't like Martin Scorsese, just hop on the Disney train, all right? Just know that there's always a place for you.
Okay.
Martin Scorsese and fucking Bob Iger are buddies now. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're meeting. They're going to find out a way how to bring the Irishman into the MCU.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Fucking. Bufalino Ragnarok.
Yeah, Russell Bufalino is going to fucking pick up Mjolnir and can't even handle it.
And Jimmy Hoffa's going to be the next main villain in the next Avengers movie.
That was 9 movies.
You're the one that picked it.
I did pick it.
So tell us about it.
We watched Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping, the Lonely Island film from, what, 2 years ago? 2017, 2016?
I think 2017.
Something like that. Popstar, starring, well, obviously, The Lonely Island, so Andy Samberg, Jorma Taccone, Akiva Schaffer. Also get some pretty quality performances from Sarah Silverman.
Tim Meadows.
My man, who's Tim Meadows, is the goddamn funniest part of any movie that he's in. It's
Eric
amazing.
Andre.
Eric Andre. That I just want a whole movie of just,
just
Will
TNZ,
Arnett, yeah. Will Arnett, Chelsea Peretti, Eric Andre, and Mike Birbiglia just laughing. Who else were like? There wasn't enough. I was hoping for more Joan Cusack. The scenes
really
that Joan Cusack were in were the one scene that she was in was great. And what's his name? I know he was on SNL for a while. Tyler,
Chris
the Creator
Redd?
Guy, Chris Redd.
Yeah.
Chris Redd. Anyway, so it follows Connor Farrell, played by Andy Samberg, who is a pop star extraordinaire, who is about to, at the film's beginning, he is about to release his second album after coming to fame as a solo artist, and before that, a member of a group called the Style Boys, which is him and Jorma Taccone and Akiva Schaffer. There was a falling out between Andy Samberg and Akiva Schaffer, so now Connor is just Connor for real with his DJ, Owen, who is played by Jorma Taccone. The album tanks, and he has to deal with it while also on his world tour. Tim Meadows is his manager. Sarah Silverman is his publicist. Chris Redd is the opening act, who is the hot new Tyler, the Creator-esque hip-hop artist.
Like 2014.
Yeah.
2012, Tyler, the Creator.
Yeah. I think there were some other people, but it also just the cameos in this film are endless, and the way that they are used are perfect. I don't know if I laughed harder in this movie than when they were talking about Connor's rise to fame on the catchphrase verse. And the person explaining how brilliant the catchphrase verse is goddamn DJ Khaled. Because
I actually wrote that down. That was like one of my favorite quotes. DJ Khaled said, when you have a catchphrase, the world is catched by your phrase.
And that's what's so brilliant about this movie is I think 20 years from now, we are going to... They really did capture a certain cultural zeitgeist of... They put these people in the right parts, because 20 years from now, I could watch this movie and be like, oh, that's right, DJ Khaled was a person, and he just did catchphrases.
Mm-hmm.
That was what he was. But yeah, no, they were all like supposed to be... I think the Style Boys were like supposed to be the Beastie Boys, because there are all these old school hip-hop artists in there... Not like old school, but like Questlove and Nas are talking about, and Usher are talking about
growing up on their shit.
But then, I mean, obviously they're all in their mid to late 30s, if that's even how old they are. They might even be younger. And it seems as though his first album came out just a couple years ago, so maybe there's a gap. I guess that the logic isn't in there, but I don't know. What general thoughts on this movie, guys?
Oh, my fucking God. I loved it.
Yeah, it was so goddamn fun.
Yeah.
I watched it with Juan, and man, We were laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had such a fun time.
Said that it was probably going to be sort of a musical, and it was a musical.
It was 100% a musical.
Yeah.
In the way that it's the Lonely Island doing their thing.
Was there a funnier song than the Fucked Bin Laden song? Because that song was so fucking funny.
Trying to remember the songs
Fuck
that were
Bin
in
Laden.
It. Yeah, that was. That was a. Wow. I don't know, that catchphrase verse. Like that song with the catchphrase verse was pretty funny.
Emma Stone.
With Emma Stone. Yeah, that was like Sia or Lady Gaga, someone like that. Also, the Adam Levine hologram. That's the thing is like this was. So I actually, to piggyback off what we were talking about last week, this was something where, the plot structure as far as his. You see a character flaw that he has. You realize that he's gonna the fame is gonna get to his head. He's gonna alienate the people around him. They're gonna leave, and then he's gonna learn to be better and come back. That level of there were so many gags in this. It was just joke after joke after joke. After fucking Jorma's helmet with the beam of light that shot into the sky
with the horn. Like
like that's Godzilla.
That same horn, I think, was in the movie Red State with Kevin Smith.
Really?
Yeah.
I never saw that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that either.
What I was saying last week about how I think for a plot to work on that sort of a cliche structure has to be that many jokes over and over and over and over again, and this delivered. I had a feeling I was going to enjoy it. I didn't know I was gonna love it as much as I did.
I was like all right, we're gonna watch it, it'll be good. I expected myself to go I thought I would like it on the level that I like enjoy watching like SNL now, where I can like understand what they're doing and I'm fine with it. I don't particularly love it, but I don't particularly dislike it or anything. But oh no, very early on in the movie I was laughing and I just kept on going. The jokes kept on hitting.
I think that the title speaks for itself. Like the jokes never stopping.
Do you remember very close to the beginning when Maya Rudolph, I think, drops a hard R?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was just...
Someone acknowledges that, too. I think it's, like, one of Connor Farrell's, like, lackeys.
Which was just... Oh, my God. I'm looking at... Okay, does grossing mean... Yeah, this movie lost money. And I get that this was... I mean, they used their budget.
How much? What did it cost?
It grossed... This was a $20 million budget for a film that grossed 9.5.
Wow.
So they didn't net anything. They lost like $10 million on this, which is... a shame, because this is the kind of comedy movie that I haven't seen in a long ass time.
Yeah.
Where it was just that joke after joke after joke, the thing that I wanted more than anything.
But I mean, none of us went and saw it. We didn't.
Yeah, and that was, so now we'll get into my question.
Yeah. Wait.
Why don't we see things?
Well, I mean, a big part of it for me personally is time.
I think, like, just thinking about that, like around that time, around that the time of this movie's release, like I was kind of probably riding a wave of getting sick of Andy Samberg, of seeing him like in things, because the latter half of this decade was just filled with a lot of his stuff, because I think that's when he had left SNL. He was doing that. He did that one movie with Sandler. Adam Sandler. Yeah, that's my boy. And like the stuff that he was doing outside of SNL and outside of Lonely Island at the time were like not things that anyone was interested in, I think.
Except Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But I think I see that more of as like a success on Mike Schur's, like...
Mike Schur did Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That doesn't shock me at all.
So, like, I think that show is definitely huge in Andy Samberg's, like, resurgence for this movie. But at the time when it was released, like, I remember seeing trailers for it and thinking, like, it's just a parody of... Because when I first saw this going into it, when did we see this? On Thursday?
Thursday.
On Thursday. In the back of my mind, I had kind of, like, thought that this movie was going to be based on a lot of different artists, but one artist in particular, which is Justin Bieber.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because Justin Bieber has that documentary that has a similar name.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very much not about Justin Bieber.
No.
No, it no. seems...
And it's very centered on, like, the Style Boys reuniting towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, like, I thought you brought up a really good question about, is this a movie about...
Andy Samberg?
Yeah, and his...
I mean, that was the...
Association with the Lonely Island.
I mean, that's the whole thing I thought. I wrote that down very early on in the film, before Bill Hader's moment, even.
Mm-hmm.
And
which I wished he was going to be in there more.
I don't know. I was okay with
his
flatlining.
Yeah, yeah.
That flatliners bit.
We rewinded and watched it again. Yeah. So I mean, not only did I think this was about Andy Samberg, because like Andy Samberg's the main character, but like. Andy Samberg out of the Lonely Island is the one that we all know the name of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I was pretty sure it was Jorma and Akiva before I looked it up, but I kind of thought it was like Jeroma.
Yeah,
you know, like,
to
I had
be
a
fair,
vague understanding.
Andy Samberg's name is Andy, so it's easier to remember his name.
But also, he was the only cast member of the three. They all joined.
They were all writers.
They all joined SNL at the same time.
Yes.
But Andy Samberg was the only cast member.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the only one who has ever been the star of movies. The others have been in shit, you know. Jorma was in fucking...
Role Models
that we watched last
Sort time. Of, yeah.
He's in it.
He's in it, yeah. He's in it.
But... They have never, they're not leading men. They are more writer directors.
Mm-hmm.
And so while watching this film, I started to wonder did they like write and make this as a way to make fun of and deal with issues that they had to deal with as a collective? Because Andy Samberg is playing in a different setting than the comedy world. He is playing Andy Samberg. Out of the three of them, he is the one that,
sure.
While the other two are like writer directors, they're more behind the scenes guys. And while Andy Samberg did write, and you know, we don't actually know who wrote. I tried to like do research and see if they had ever had a public falling out, or see mm-hmm. if I could get more crediting. The only thing is that they both directed, and like they both directed this movie, and Andy Samberg is just a writer.
Okay.
But they're more behind the scenes guys, just like in the movie where they're the writer and the producer, and Andy Samberg is just the one that is out performing the kind of center stage character.
Yeah.
And that's the exact same way that The Lonely Island kind of branched out, where Andy Samberg is the one that got the big mainstream success, while The Lonely Island themselves are fairly popular, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As a collective.
Akiva could not go off and... Presumably.
Right.
I thought the...
Yeah, he would have to go be a pot farmer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the...
And so I watched this movie and thought, like, is this them making fun of something that they had to actually deal with and learn?
Yeah. What were you saying, Juan?
I just really loved the analogy to the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, that was so
about,
funny.
Like, to explain, like... Akiva said it best, like, you know, when RZA goes out and does RZA, he's still doing RZA things, but he's still a part of the Wu-Tang Clan. Like,
and then Jorma goes, yeah, but when Ghostface goes out and does a Ghostface album, he's still Ghostface, but he's still in the Wu-Tang Clan. And, like, he does way more shit outside of that. Though, yeah. I did look up some more stuff that the other ones are doing.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't really done
a sure.
ton. But Jorma writes for Barry.
Really? That doesn't shock me. I would imagine that they're friends with Bill Hader if they were all writers on SNL.
At the same
and
time.
All working on another wonderful, wonderful film, Hot Rod, together. By the way, speaking of Akiva Schaffer going off and doing his own thing, I don't know if anyone noticed this.
He's the director of Hot Rod.
Yes, I did know this. I'm saying in the film, I don't know if either of you noticed this, one of those strains of weed was called postpartum depression.
Yes, I did see that.
I lost it. That was another one of the jokes that was like top tier for me. You know, I'm sure that it was not to the extreme as they make it seem in the movie, but I would imagine that the character dynamics that exist between the three of them as far as where it feels their role, they feel their roles are, is similar, because it does seem like Andy Samberg is the one who has always just kind of had the attention has always been brought to him, although... Yeah, I would imagine that it is elevated tension. I would imagine that if they really had that level of tension, I don't think that they would have been, because it's still not like they were still working together these past.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think the fallout
yeah.
ever happened, but I think in watching this, I thought this had to have been some sort of like a therapeutic exercise. Mm-hmm.
Like the new song that they were making at the end. Like, just sitting in that shed smoking weed, like, trying to come up with whatever they could. Yeah, yeah. I can very much see this as, like, a,
mm-hmm.
like an exercise in rebuilding, like, the friendship that they had prior to them going off and doing their own things. Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't see this. I don't know why a lot of people didn't see this. I as someone who...
A lot of people aren't style boys for life.
Apparently not. Not like Usher is.
I just danced on stage with the style boys. I did the Dougie roll.
I don't know. It makes me realize that, like, I could just be... Because I feel like I do have the time, even when I don't. Even when I do have the time, I'm not... There are movies that I will talk about how excited I am for them to come out for months on end, and I won't see.
Yep.
But I it made me realize that I need to be taking more chances because I like seeing movies. I don't need to just be watching the same TV shows that I watch over and over and over again. I could be going out. You know, it's the... Even movies that I don't... Because I don't think I saw this and thought it was going to be amazing, but I also didn't think that Ford versus Ferrari was going to blow my mind, and it didn't shatter everything I knew about film, but it was so fun to watch, and it was just a great movie in general that I... Yeah, that's... I guess that's what I want to know is even when... Because would you guys say that even when you do have the time, you're going out and seeing movies...
I don't know. I see a lot of movies with Juan.
Yeah, we...
How often would you guys say you go see a movie?
Depends on the time frame. Sometimes we'll see two in a week. Sometimes we'll see none in a month.
Yeah, it sounds about right, yeah.
I was about to say, I can't think of the last time I saw two movies.
But if I'm at, you know, like, if we're hanging out, the chances of us watching a movie are, like, one in two. Like, if we're not going to see a movie...
We'll watch Almost a movie.
Definitely watch a movie.
Yeah.
I get anxiety about it sometimes as far as making that choice of like, oh, what should I see? Like, should I take a chance on that? Is it because time is the only real currency that we have. It's like, how are we going to, what? That's true.
I'm not going to argue against you.
Exactly.
Yeah, dude, like, we have real currency. That's real. If it wasn't real, then how could I would just have, like, infinite everything I want right now. It's not real.
Memes should be currency. Whoever has the dankest memes is, like...
I forget.
Time's the only thing that you're constantly spending and will run out of someday.
I have run out of money 1,000 times.
Yeah, but you'll get money again. Anyway, I don't know. I get really overwhelmed and anxious by that, and I think that's why I don't see as many movies as I do. It's the same reason why I get, if I go to a bookstore or a record store and I get really anxious browsing
for things. Yeah, it's, I think for me too, it's just a little overwhelming, like the amount of movies that are released at a given time. Like, I know just this past month, there have been like 4 movies that I've wanted to go see.
Well, that's the problem of this time of year. If they put all of the movies that are released between like late September and Christmas, if they spaced those out throughout like the spring and the other chunks of the winter, that'd be fantastic. Because you got summer movies and then you have like award season movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like January through May. It's just nothing that you give a fuck about.
I don't know. Occasionally something good slips through the cracks.
Occasionally, though. Like, I can't remember the last...
But, like, we should throw some of these movies that have, you know, like... You know,
marketing. How are you going to market that?
How am I going to market that?
Because especially
I'll kill everybody at a marketing firm.
When's the last time you saw... Okay.
Now I'm in charge. And I say we are switching the dates. Enjoy that, folks.
Right, how are you going to get people to see a non-Marvel movie in theaters unless it's like, oh, there's awards buzz around this, or, oh, the big summer blockbuster? I honestly feel like I do see my favorite movies that time of year, though. I will
only make porn movie. Only porn movies. Everybody.
You're going to sell that? You're going to get people to pay for porn? Lars Dahlberg, you're going to be the person that gets people to pay for porn again.
Again?
I mean, you used to have to buy porn. We didn't know this in our lifetime. That's right. But like,
dude, I'm pretty sure people are still paying for porn.
I feel like the best way for us to talk about this movie, other than me saying that a lot of my issues that I had watching Role Models, I think this improved upon as far as the number of jokes within the film making up for the fact that the plot was... more or less predictable or cliche.
Yeah, I think this one did a little bit... For me, I think this stood out more in the sense that they did a better job at making the gags. Like the... Liza had mentioned in the last podcast with Role Models about how, you know, every character had some sort of, like, gag.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like every character served a purpose, and with Popstar in that same vein, every character served a purpose. But mm-hmm. I felt like the gags just made like they were intensified by who they were using.
Yeah,
like the fact that they had DJ Khaled talking about catchphrases, or like 50 Cent talking about like the how phenomenal like. Connor for Real's like single was for the catchphrases, and like, just all those characters that they used for them to be like real people and still fit within this plot fantastic.
Not only that, all of these characters were funny, but all of these characters were somehow intricate to the plot in the way that Role Models wasn't. Like, yeah, you had a lot of goofy characters in Role Models, but I mean, Tim Meadows had a purpose to be there, and Tim Meadows also contributed to conflict. So did Chris Redd. So did... who am I thinking about right now? Sarah Silverman. Yeah, Sarah Silverman had a lot to do with the resolute, like the way that the conflict resolved. So, yeah, it really... This was... This is a movie that I will watch again. Like, I do have a desire. Like, I will say, oh, we could watch Popstar right now, and it would be a fun time. Mm-hmm. And I think I could see this being a movie that, like, I put up there in... Yeah, it's because I don't have to care about the plot. If I just want to laugh over and over and over and over again for a while, this falls into my, this is rewatchable. And it makes me sad that I didn't see it when it came out, because I should have.
It was very good. My big takeaway is they just fucking drew from real life. Like, I think the reason that the DJ Khaled bit we keep referencing works is because they have him there with the catchphrase first. They have him there doing what he does.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing as why I looked at it and I saw Andy Samberg in his place in The Lonely Island. Mm-hmm. And that's the same reason why I like watching guys like Questlove and Nas, who are like foundational hip-hop guys who in 2017, you know, Questlove, I mean, when did Undone come out? Like 2015? When was the last time The Roots put an album out?
Oh, they've done something since Undone, I think. Maybe not. Looking that up. I think Undone came out in 2015 or 2014.
That's what I think it came out. But, you know, I mean, The Roots are like, even though they're still releasing music, they're not currently...
Okay, so Undone was in 2011, and then You Shoot Your Cousin was
2014. So yeah, The Roots haven't put out anything since 3 years before then. Nas hasn't been relevant in a long time. So, you know, the fact that they had those guys like talking about the formation of the Style Boys, you know, like every cameo was used in a way that complemented real life, and I felt like the characters themselves kind of complemented.
Yeah.
Kind of steering away from that, there was definitely some like gags that were very like outlandish that still stuck well, like the Killer Bee one when he's getting interviewed and
That was great. Yeah, that was amazing.
Get the flamethrower.
That might have been the most absurd joke.
Yeah, that was my second favorite gag outside of the or behind the Flatliners.
I don't know. When Will Arnett doing his Will Arnett's Harvey Levin was insane. When he picks up the one plastic cup that's taped with
the fucking credits TMZ scene yet?
No, I haven't. I just found out there was a post credits.
I told him last night. It's so funny.
Oh yeah.
Watch the credits.
Yeah. I don't know how to dissect a movie like this. Like, I don't know how to have a conversation about a comedy film that we all just agree is we had fun watching. Because the purpose of this movie was to have fun watching it. Fucking mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Recommend to anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, really anyone. Wow. Yeah. I can't even think of creative takeaways from this other than... make something fun. What I was saying about every character being integral, I think that could work for that one.
I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I think I was just having way too much fun while watching this movie to really, like, creatively take anything away from it.
Yeah. I didn't want to take notes. I stopped.
No, none of us have any notes.
How much did this make? And I looked that up because I was like, this is worth the budget. Everyone is in this. ASAP Crunchables. wait, are they also the Beastie Boys? ? How old is he supposed to be? ? And then I wrote strains of weed.
My last note is Bill Hader. And Bill Hader shows up like 17 minutes into the film. And I was just like, I don't need to keep taking notes on this.
Yeah, every time
know what I think about this.
Every time there was a guest interview, it was great. Every time there was a Imogen Poots's little line about how she's like, I would wake up and you wouldn't, or like I would be looking at the screen and I would see these celebrity couples and you didn't know how much of their relationship was true love and how much of it was publicity. And I just knew that one day I wanted to be one of those couples. And then they just stand there. Oh my
god. That was great. Seal was. Oh my god.
There were some moments they're showing these tweets about the Seal thing, and one of them was like the trending hashtag was hashtag Seal Team Go. Oh god, this was just too Everyone should just go see this.
Yeah.
Well, and in the spirit of seeing things, Juan, what should we see this week?
Oh man, I told you, man. I'm in a conundrum right now.
We have to give you a countdown. Where you just say one of the two of them.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
10 or 5.
5.
5.
4.
3. 2. 1.
The Bar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sick. Now I have an excuse and a reason to watch it.
Yeah. That was actually
out of curiosity. What was the other one?
Fanboys.
I knew it.
Fanboys, yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you like? Do you like it?
There, okay. This is why I was like half leaning towards like picking Fanboys, because I think it serves its purpose in the sense that like the grander scheme of like what they're trying to accomplish,
sure,
how the movie ends, just kind of sets up like
the last line of the movie is amazing.
Yeah. That's
yeah. It's
it's
good.
It's good. It's good.
It's not my favorite.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it since this new wave of Star Wars films have come out. Who's that main actor who I feel like used to be around all the time and now I couldn't?
Sam Huntington. I've actually met him. Yeah, I've met him. He's a very sweet dude. Oh, wait.
No, I'm thinking the big guy.
No,
that's
no.
That's not Josh Gad. But like I feel like he was Josh Gad before Josh Gad existed.
I can't remember his name, but I know he's been in I can't remember right now.
I'm gonna look this up.
Where'd you meet him? C2E2?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Very sweet dude.
I'm hoping we can turn this podcast into something where we can at least just like apply for press passes to things. That would be great.
That'd be phenomenal, dude.
Yeah, no, when you said that it wasn't going to be a Star Wars movie, but or like when you made it seem like Dan Fogler, Jay Baruchel is in this.
Kristen Bell's in it too.
Kristen Bell and
William Shatner, Carrie Fisher.
I know Seth Rogen is like the leader of the Trekkies. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And then I know it's a lot of I don't remember if
Jay
Lucas
and Silent
is in
Bob.
It or if just if it's just
Jay and Silent Bob are in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my dad calls me Silent Bob because he doesn't know the difference between the two of them. And I'm like, Dad, I understand what you're trying to say, but I'm Jay.
Well, you look like Jay, but you dress like Silent Bob.
He's like, yeah, that's a good point. Like if Jay and Silent Bob did the fusion, huh? Okay. It'd be Lars.
Cool. So Juan's gonna watch El Bar for like the third time in a month.
Yes.
Lars is gonna watch it for the second. I'm gonna watch it for the first. 3, 2, 1. Let's end this podcast.